pandemic got us into a reflective space and made us look inward to see what we can do for the world at large. As a self-expression coach, I became a catalyst for women and started Vani, a one-on-one coaching program for women on finding their voice, to speak up, to be visible. As a storyteller, I spotted there were many ordinary people amongst us leading extraordinary lives, making a difference to the world, and they needed to be heard. Thus was born You and I with Rashmi Shetty, where amazing personal journeys with their uniqueness and individuality are showcased. A reaffirmation of the fact, open your eyes wider, the world is far more beautiful when we acknowledge the presence of both you and I. Our guest today is Harish Hande, who has been with Selco with over 27 years of grassroots experience in understanding, developing, and deploying sustainable energy solutions for the underserved communities. Harish pursued his graduation from the Indian Institute of Technology, Kharagpur, and completed his PhD from the University of Massachusetts. He was awarded the Ramon Magsaysay Award in 2011, recognizing, amongst other achievements, his passionate and pragmatic efforts to put solar power technology in the hands of the poor through a social enterprise that brings customized, affordable, and sustainable electricity to India's vast rural populace, encouraging the poor to become asset creators. Today, Selco is an umbrella of organizations, each tasked to address gaps in the energy access ecosystem, namely Selco India, Energy Access Enterprise, Selco Foundation, Nonprofit R&D, Selco Incubation Center, Nurturing Grassroots Energy Enterprises, and finally, Selco Fund to deploy patient capital. Listen in as Hari shares his journey, the true influencers, the must-dos, and gives us so much to mull over on how to create a society that would produce innovators rather than followers. Hi, Harish. Such an honor and pleasure having you on You and I with Rashmi Shetty. I've been a huge fan. So for me, in many ways, this is a dream come true having you on this podcast. I'd love to know what little Harish was like and the Harish that the world knows today. What has the journey been like? Can you take us through that, Jen?
I guess, yeah, I mean, born and brought up in Rourkela in Odisha. And I think I had a privilege of being in a company town. The kids from company town would relate to, because before you came home, your mother would know actually how much did you score in mathematics, because the teacher would have called up and said that your son has failed. The question is, so you had no way of hiding your report card and say the report card didn't come in. In terms of education, I would say till 8th grade or 9th grade, I would say it was really coming 34th or 35th out of 35 people. And I still remember in class 5 and 6th, I failed in all subjects. And I got a conditional promotion that if I did well next year, I would get promoted. So, but I guess that's because in Rourkela, in Odisha, my mother knew the maths teacher who was also from Karnataka, the very few people from Karnataka. And so I guess the influence worked, and that was what it's mostly it was cricket and outside. Studies was the least of the priorities in many ways. And that was what it was. And most of the time it was outside the class in terms of myself and a couple of people. So that was what I would say my early journey was in many ways.
So what shifted then? What happened post 8th standard that your CV reads IIT Kharagpur, which is like a difficult place to get into, a dream for a lot of people, and then on it's been magical. So what changed? Did something change after 8th standard?
No, nothing I would say changed. I mean, it was, see, that's what every kid has in it. So the question, it was nothing to... It was something about, I think a couple of my benchmates proved that, boss, this is high time you paid your attention to studies and that you need to get by. And I think thanks to them, it was like saying that a little bit of attention in class would help a long way to go. And also I think it was a rote-based education, or I guess one math teacher or one physics teacher would have changed in terms of 8th and 9th, of making it more practical oriented, or saying that, okay, this makes sense. And then you grasp, and then you become addictive in terms of logic per se. And then suddenly you see this logic to everything in terms of emotional logic and personal logic. And then you connect to that. And rather than saying that, what did you mug up the formula? I think a couple of professors and definitely two of my benchmates who changed 8th and 9th and which 10th. And IIT was, coming from a steel city, the pressure was that if you don't get into IIT, you're not worth the study. I mean, you're not a studious student. So even while you're playing, the wicketkeeper would be talking maths to the batsman, the bowler. So it was 24/7. So the question, it was like the herd mentality. And that's why it was easier. I mean, if you look at that era, a lot of the students who got into IIT were mostly from Jamshedpur, Bhilai, Rourkela, Durgapur, the steel cities per se. And there was inspiration of people who had gone. And then you study, and then you decode how the next year's exam is going to be. So there was a logic and that. And then I guess these steel cities were then replaced by the Kota factories and the Agarwals, everything else, I think. But it was more about the steel city that pushes you to pressure. Unfortunate in some cases, I would say, but otherwise I would not have gone into IIT personally.
Oh, okay. But for somebody who came 34 out of 35, this was just not a choice, but something that everyone around you was doing, so you did it. So it was like the herd mentality that pushed you there. Or did you have other options? Did you see other things also possible for you from the steel city?
Not in Rourkela. In those eras, it was two choices. Either you become a doctor or an engineer, right? Yeah. So very less choice in many ways. And I think something that I should learn from my sister, I think she said the biggest thing that happened to her, the biggest success that happened to her was that she failed the 10th grade. And I think she said, if I had not failed the 10th grade, my parents would not have thought about where to put her or what to put her. And now she's an artist in her own right. So the question is, then she went to Shantiniketan because that was what it is. But she said if he had passed 10th, she would not have gone to Shantiniketan. She would have done some BCom, BSc and struggled to see what it was. I think for her, the biggest success is failing 10th. So for her, it was maybe a herd mentality per se to start with. But also, I think then seeing how, for me, IIT Kharagpur was an eye-opener from a different perspective. One is you live in cocoons or in the steel cities where you don't know the difference between casteism, religion, etc., etc. And then everybody's equal and all that. Then in Kharagpur was a different, though at that point of time, a lot of equality. But you also saw much poorer students coming. And that does not exist now in IITs because of the barrier of what you call it as the type of pre-work that is needed to write the exam. Many of the poor can't afford it. But there, I think IIT, the beauty of Kharagpur IIT was that it was more about the discussions, the debates, the orientation, that happened in the hostel, the management, which was because I was an extremely, extremely, public debate was out of question. In 12 years of high school, I never, ever, ever did public debate. I never spoke public. None of the teachers would remember me at all. Zero, sip. I didn't do anything that was at all. Any of the students, I mean, if I went there after some years, they would not remember me. I mean, when I went there, none of them would remember because I was that very extremely, extremely shy in terms of very, very. But it was IIT which actually pushed you, the hostel life pushed you to public speaking, forced you to sports in a different manner, and saying that failure was celebrated. So I think that changed. Yes, Rourkela taught me one thing, but IIT hostel life was which pushed that shyness completely. Zero. No, none of my classmates would actually ever. High school mates, and if you meet my batchmates from high school and batchmates from IIT, they would not agree.
Wow. But this is interesting because there are a lot of children who don't speak all through school, fear failure so much. And the fear of failure itself is the biggest fear than failure itself. And a lot of parents push children towards that space of, remember, if you don't study, you'd fail. And to all those people, what would you want to tell them now, Harish, when you look back that, and you said that your sister said failure was the best thing that happened. What is it about failure that pushes you or helps you evolve?
I think, see, that it's both to teachers as well as to the parents. One is, I mean, it's a famous cartoon of in a classroom, you have the monkey, the elephant, et cetera, et cetera. And the elephant's father is saying, I'm so disappointed that you can't fly like the eagle's uncle's son. Right. So the question, or the fish is complaining to the kids and how come you not climb the tree? So we are in that motion where we are not able to be very cut off. And we same to the teachers now. I tell to the parents that why are you imposing your failures to make sure that the kids succeed? So your failures get covered up, number one. And number two, to the teachers, teaching the people who come one first and second is the easiest. Don't clap yourself. Your hallmark of a teacher is, are you paying attention to the people who are coming last? And seeing that what is required by the people who are coming last, and can I bring them up in their education? Because your greatest failure is that somebody is coming 36th or 37th. That's a teacher's failure. Let's be very clear. It's not the student's failure. That means you are not able to teach properly, that is able to inspire. The same thing to the parents. And there was a classmate of mine from IIT who brought his daughter once. And she said, I mean, one year in engineering, basically, I said, what's your interest? She said something, I don't know, psychology, something. I said, leave it then. Drop off engineering. She said, can I? I said, yeah. If you really, I mean, in the sense that I shouldn't take the credit for that, but she left and she actually is a gold medalist in psychology, right? Why are the parents just killing and creating, killing innovation, killing the thought process, the spark in everybody? Because something that you didn't do, you want to actually do it. Or you want to do it for somebody else in a sense that my daughter is better than your daughter or getting 97, what is the grades? So I think it is that mentality has to go. I mean, even in my own organization, I was told you before when people said, why are you joining Selco? I asked the parents, some of the parents, I said, they say they complain about roads and they complain about everything, but they don't want their son and daughter to solve that problem. I said, because they always want Gandhi to be born on neighbor's house, not your house. You do not want to take responsibility of actually solving it. And so, but you can complain. And that's, I think, irresponsibility. The biggest failure of our society, true failure, is that we complain, but we don't take responsibility. And that is what we push on the kids. I mean, simple thing. No, we are hypocrisy, right? In a sense, we tell the kids, you have to share, you got to be blah, blah. And then when you buy a new pencil box, make sure nobody takes it from you. Nobody touches you here. So what contradicting messages are you trying to give and not let? And we start off with always no, don't do it, don't do that, don't go there. What is that? Don't come, this, that. It's always no. Never about, okay, go and do it. Right? Who cares? If you fail, right? Take the next step. Why suddenly when you are in oh, why are you not taking the risk? Why are you not becoming a leader? I want you to, your cousin is becoming. It's a hypocrisy, I would say, in many ways.
Yeah, true, true. Many contradictions in our parenting styles, very evident here. And I'm sure it'll resonate with a lot of people. And life at IIT always changes individuals who get in. I have a lot of friends who have completely converted and transformed into people who they were not when they entered. And the same thing seemed to have happened to you. So beyond studies, what else did IIT do to you?
I won't say IIT per se. It is the hostel life, which is common that a lot of people change. So I would differentiate IIT, and any kid who goes to hostel is able to, is he or she able to take advantage of the diversity, the negotiation, the issue of managing people per se. The quirks of plus you learn basics of management, the skills, the social skills, everything there in 4 years, and where there's no filter per se, there's no diplomacy. Diplomacy is out of the door, right? So I think in the era that I'm glad to have went to an hostel where diplomacy definitely was out, and I think maybe those decade that I was particularly there, lucky to have had the seniors and juniors who were inclusive in their thought process and saying that, okay, how do we include rather than divide per se. Yes, and all I would say, then got into what you call it, hostel management. You start fight for elections and you basically go through the election process and yeah, that I think a lot of the management was what I learned, I would say, in IIT from it. I mean, also, some of the, I was part of the so-called disciplinary committee. So disciplinary committee is where you have 6 professor and two representations from the students. And where 9 out of 10 cases would come for rustication. And these are whether it's severe ranking cases or something of cheating in exams. I think those are meetings which pushed you at the age of 20, when you have your professors in the same and you also have an equal right to say whether something is right or wrong. Those are brilliant learning experiences of and especially you have a student who's your colleague or you know, and he has done extremely wrong. How do you balance him not being thrown out, but also he's punished so that you're not giving the wrong signal to any other future student? So that those are things we bring up.
Okay, because some time back you spoke about emotional logic. Now, when emotions come in, emotional logic, emotions and logic somehow don't seem to be going together. But now I understand where that term came up, because you have to be rational when you're taking those decisions, especially when they are your peers, and make sure that you learn a life lesson there which stays in good stead later. Yeah, and then post IIT, what happened? Are those 4 years at IIT, and then you were very clear what you want to do and set out on the journey?
I'm never clear. I'm never clear, because I see the thing. And also tell people, don't put unnecessary pressure on to prove that everybody, oh, don't you have focus? Don't you do? I think this is where we spoil the mentality of the kids and saying that the pressure of, okay, you only have 2 choices, so two, have a focus. No, I would like to get a solution provider, and I need to know, I need not know everything else, but I want to remain confused because that helps you to make more focused decisions. Because too much focus, what happens is you make modular decisions with very few parameters of saying, like a lot of people do project-based decisions. Somewhere it should be in your mind that this project that you're trying to do doesn't have an impact in 2030. So do you have an idea of what that 2030 would be from a social sustainability perspective? That I would have, like, for example, if I'm making an energy decision of doing something in the space of sugarcane, I should be able to say that in 2030, there's a potential that the Kaveri waters are dried up, leading to sugarcane not being the product. So is it like my focus, okay, why did I read sugarcane in the previous somewhere, right? I don't know where it is, but if I'm purely energy, I should not have read about sugarcane according to the focus theory, right? So the whole thing is get to know, don't pressurize. So the whole issue was, can solar as an energy tool, as a substitute at that point of time be, and then saying, can large scale solar help India per se? And so I'm looking at universities, and then very few universities, actually in the US only two universities offered sustainability per se, very, very in the rudimentary stage, I would say. And then joined, and then I went to Dominican Republic after a year, or which had 6 months or 8-12, yeah. Then there I saw there are 10 houses, very poor households using solar and paying for it. And that's one of the initial thoughts of decentralization. Actually, when Martinez, a farmer who met me and said about switching off the light three times and saying, see, it works and nobody controls it. I own the electricity light. And this is what I've learned from your country of Mahatma Gandhi, said. Then he said, I have a problem with you Indians, because you've done great work for United States, Europe. You're great doctors. You're great engineers. But you always, when I meet an Indian, you always complain. This has not happened. That has not happened. But you never take the responsibility that you should be doing it yourself. And he said, why I'm saying this is critical, because Dominican Republic needs to get poverty out. And the only country it can actually learn is from India. And if you guys are complaining, because Americans and Europeans cannot give us the solutions as the Indians would be able to, because you have similar structures. That couple of things, actually, both in terms of the decentralization, and when I came back to my professor and said, I'm basically went to Rourkela, where my parents didn't have to pay for the electricity bill. Then I went to IIT, where the state paid for it. And then I wanted a scholarship to the US. Basically, I'm a product of subsidy, right? And I'm going to write a PhD that nobody might read it at all. So, and I've never felt what it means to be without electricity. And so that's when I left the US, was my first step out within two and a half years. Though I had finished my coursework on PhD, and the professor said, when will you come and finish it? But yeah, then I finished it much later, but the question was, went to Sri Lanka and then settled in India, yeah.
But what drew you to sustainability, energy, and all of that? What created that interest? Because like you said, you were living in a space where your parents were not paying, you were living in a college, you were staying in a college and studying in a college, which had its own set of subsidies. So what drew you to even understand what sustainability was, natural resources were?
Maybe I wouldn't answer it very clear, but I think somewhere in your back of your mind, it always, see, for example, if you look at in Rourkela, which was built in 1959 and 67, a lot of the tribals were basically working as servants in many people's houses. Okay. And it was their land in many ways. It was there. I mean, the tribals of Saudi Arabia became the sheikhs, right? But the tribals of our country remain tribals, become CSR project photographed, right? Rather than true owners of assets per se. So, and then IIT was also like, okay, you have this opportunity. And same thing, then you realize that over a period of time, you got into IIT because also millions of Indians did not write the exam. So it's not what? I mean, you're running a 100-meter race, four of us, and all four of us win a medal, right? Or three of us. So the question for me was, at that point of time, yes, oil was crisis and all reading about oil. And then India's poverty was at the forefront.
Yeah.
And people were saying that, okay, can we get this electricity, et cetera, et cetera. So somewhere, time I believed that solar could be, not sure, everybody said expensive. So I didn't have an answer, but I somehow thought there was a connection between development and energy. And people said there's no connection between sustainability and development. And that for me was scary.
Okay.
And so that's when, yeah, it started to.
It was scary, and still you went into that space.
No, scary because if they didn't think sustainability and development was linked, and they said that first let's develop and then look at sustainability, for me was scary, because then the world would be fried.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Then the poverty would be fried. So what are we trying to do? Are we just aping the West and saying that, okay, you're going to burn everything that you have? And that time global warming was not a big thing at all later on, but yes. And that then you start building up. And I was also very fortunate to actually have a lot of mentors, because if you look at that time, so my wife gets angry because not now, but in the, in some of these places, I was the only person below 60. So I used to get a lot of invitations to funerals later in my life, because a lot of my friends were dying. They were 80s. I was still in my late 20s. So the California hippies, et cetera. I mean, they were wonderful chaps who now are responsible for what the world solar is. And so that I think is irreplaceable of those legends, like either anti-Vietnam War activists in the US, arrested by the CIA, Jimmy Carter's advisor. Those are gems who pushed me in these conferences or workshops, whatever small workshops we used to have here.
And so in a way, somewhere, you were really a forerunner in these spaces, which today is the norm in conversations and everyone's talking about. But at that time, did you find a lot of people to discuss? Or like you said, was it those people who had seen a lot of life who understood the value of what we were going to realize years or decades down the line? And you just ended up being fortunate to be in their company. How did you find these people? Did life just throw you in the midst of all of them? What was your journey like when you got into this space?
Once you travel, for example, when I went to the Dominican Republic and you were in the rural areas, and that time still there is a program called the Peace Corps of John Kennedy who did that. And there were Peace Corps volunteers. India did not have a similar, but these were young American, I would not say kids, they were older to me, but who would give up everything, right? From a background in Connecticut to the Dominican Republic, then married to a Dominican Republic, Richard Hansen, who first put up solar in 1984 in Dominican Republic. So the question is, it's interesting. Yesterday, I had a chat with the Dominican Republic consulate general here in India. He said, you had a connection to Dominican Republic and we are talking about something that you and Richard talked in 1991. And so Richard was there, and then we met Jose Martin, a professor of mine who wrote one of the first papers on solar. And then one connects together and then you like the same peers. I mean, John Nahr, who was a famous photographer, but who had traveled Vietnam and Ching. And then I met Neville, who was on the CIA watch list for many years because of the anti-war, and then became Jimmy Carter. Then step by step, because I used to tag along or I would meet them in the field, the trust, I mean, and the good part is that they would all like the brilliance of arguing so that both of us would come to a better place of learning rather than for winning the argument. And that was very clear. That these guys have taught me, I mean, brilliantly, that you argue purposely, even if there are three people who agree with you, suddenly take an opposite stance, right? And so that you can come to a different place. And then Russell DeLucia, like for example, he's an example. He would, if people say that, okay, some people say, so you, okay, got it, you won the argument. He said, I didn't argue to win. I did argue to learn. I think, and those are the people who destroyed the myths of age in terms of that you could contribute anything, pushing you to the limits of thinking, and also debate and saying that, okay, can it actually be done, not done? So that, I think, yes, those guys with life experiences of going through, whether some, I would meet a person I asked him, why is your teeth like very, very narrow? He used to be a mercenary once, right? And hired by some of the African dictators, right? So I mean, yeah, and then it was fun. And they're taking through and traveling in Vietnam, taking through the torture chambers that these guys would explain at that time what happened. They were part of it, and some were part of it. Some are people who escaped through boat, and some were captured by the boat or by the Camerons at that point of time. So me talking to those people. So I said, tell to the youngsters, boss, your great grandfathers, 80, 80, 85, who are alive, do a recording session. Sit with them. Just because those are things that not on Google, not on Twitter. Take it from me. Those are things, those are lessons that why rice was grown that manner. Why was it not taken in a different manner? There's a logic to everything. And you might criticize these are old ways. My question is, if that first chip was not invented, you wouldn't have your iPad now. So nothing is old in many ways.
Wow. Have you documented this, Harish? Have you put these thoughts together? Because this is gold. Like you said, it's not available on Wikipedia or Google. And I'm sure for some people, this is going to be so interesting to read. And for the next generation, this is going to be like a treasure house, because meeting those people is going to be next to impossible. So awesome.
Yeah. So it's been, and many of these life lessons also from farmers of India, and that's why the first thing I didn't want to come to India when I did my field visit, because I thought my education was a barrier. Because the moment I come to rural India, people will think, oh, you're educated, they'll put me on a different level. And that for me was scary. And So went to Sri Lanka, actually. And when you don't know the language, you don't know anything, and then people will treat you the same way in the rural villages. And then I think my main challenge for many is that, can I be one of them like that? Can in the bus nobody talk to me differently, but talk to me as another person? And so one day was very frustrated, and then I took all my degrees and burned them and said, I don't know whether I could erase those times. But the question is, I think one of the biggest casteism that we have in a country like ours is two things. One is English, in a sense, nothing against English, but people who do PowerPoint, Excel and Word get the money. And the second is this so-called education casteism. Like, I'll do a PhD on sugarcane, I'll be always called an expert. But a farmer doing 45 years never will be called an expert, right? And so that day I was called for a convocation of the Agri University of Dharwad. So during my address, I said, I mean, it's interesting that Agri University is Agri University. And then we always give honorary doctorates to people who achieved, but how come not a single farmer in this country has got an honorary doctorate, number one. Number two is that this institution is made for farmers, but the very person, you would not let him through the gates because he or she is dressed differently. 9 out of 5 farmers will be rejected from your gates because you. So I'm not sure about what these institutions stand for, if that is the case, right? So I think those are buttons that we need to push. And so I requested when I met the chief minister also. And it's high time if you're truly looking at inclusivity, why are the farmers of this country? Oh, we have to help the farmers. No help. Farmer is asking for your help. And the overall subsidies that the farmers get is 2%. The overall subsidies that the middle class gets is 6%. The airports are subsidized. The roads are subsidized. The fuel tax is subsidized. So don't tell me that the subsidies are got by the poor. It's 6% to 2%. So that has to come out. And none of the airports, JFK included, ever make money, right?
Yeah. And so with all of this, because what you're telling us is so insightful, and these are thought-provoking questions, but taking a step back into your own journey from Sri Lanka, when you came to India and you first entered into the space to create Selco, this is like way back in 1995 was when Selco was born. What prompted you to go ahead and do it? What was the response that you got? Because were people talking about solar energy at that point? Did you have too many buyers? Were you able to just get into conversation a lot more easier?
Well, before Selco, I mean, 93 was when I was spending a lot of time in the villages of India, first thing, especially Karnataka and a little bit of Andhra. But that's when I met a lot of people who, so solar was not what I was looking at, as a lot of them willingness to pay, et cetera, et cetera. And then one thing, the poor people can't afford, but India, per se had one of the best structures that we have taken it for granted is during the agricultural revolution, two things happened. One is the creation of the regional rural banks, which actually was in large scale to create banking for assets. I'm not talking microfinance, is a glorified working capital loan. Asset creation, like you and me would not buy a house on a credit card. How do we get affordable financing for the poor to buy assets? Number one, we had 40,000 banks. Number two, the success of the agricultural revolution was actually not on the green revolution, but on the formulation of vocational schools called the ITIs, right? The ITIs and root sets is what led to the entrepreneurship in water pumps and fertilizers and what needed, the ecosystem that the farmers needed. The farmers would get loan from the bank, these guys would get, and that led to agriculture. And that actually led to the vocational schools, led to the industrial, the car revolution in Germany. I mean, you don't have engineers from MIT or anything else. These are the vocational schools who actually make Benz and make all that innovations per se. So what, unfortunately, in a country like ours, now we have the IITs, the NITKs, the ITIs, actually should be this way. I should be able to go at any time, do I have to go to ITI or do I have to go to IIT? So my question is, and if you're creating a center of innovation and invention in IITs, you should put the 10 times the money of creating a centers of innovation and invention in ITIs, where, because the people who come to ITIs is the most important criteria, they own the problems. They own it, not the IITians. They don't own the problems. So that's where I would say is the division between the two, where they can come up with much better. But unfortunately, the IITians design the solutions, then try to fit a problem to it. Why not you go to the people who already know the problem is per se, right? I think those were the things that I started to learn in the initial stages, and sensei. And then sat with the bankers, what do you finance, et cetera, et cetera. Why do you finance the way you finance, like a sugarcane farmer twice a year, paddy farmer once a year, depending on the cash flow cycles, which was never in the urban sector. I mean, it was all monthly paycheck. And that is where we said, okay, if we had to adopt solar, it is so-called expensive. Can we work with the banks to create financing? Awareness was there in the government, but awareness was that 99% of the solar systems don't work because a lot of the street lights or whatever the initial was not working. And so people said solar does not work and blah, blah, et cetera, et cetera. And end users hardly had any knowledge about what it is. How can a solar plate generate electricity? So you need to have what you call it as trailblazers or adopters or early adopters. And then you would map out who would your early adopter be. So it could be father of a church, a priest of a temple, the postman, because the money order used to come, and a rural doctor, for example, because whatever the doctor says, you listen to it. So we would fit a small light in the doctor's waiting chamber. So when the power goes off, the solar comes in, or the Jesus Christ would be lit. And during the mass, when the power goes off, the temple of a priest, for example, would go. So postman. So those are the early adopters that we would look at social mapping and influence, so-called today's in terms of influencers that we call on the YouTube, and they were traditionally, and that works today also because everything is public. I mean, in the needs space, I'm not talking of the wants. Wants, you can have as much of YouTube influencers. I want an iPad. Okay, boss, who this guy said this. But when you're coming to needs that I really want, like for example, you are not going to be influenced by somebody when you have a critical disease. You're going to go to a friend who has had it and he or she recommends dot doctor, I'll go it. I'm not going to do an internet search on who is the best doctor for this. I would actually go, same thing in law. When you want to actually have a court case, you're going to get the best lawyer. It's not going through Yellow Pages or Google and say, it's going to be a friend who's actually good. Then those are personal connections you can never get away from. And when it comes to hard assets for the poor, it's always about trust. That will not go on. That cannot be replaced. So the question is, how do you create an organization that is not focused on products, but trust, but also an organization that people believe is part of the society? And that my colleagues do it brilliantly. The guy, person who runs it right now, Mohan, who runs it, who joined the organization as an office assistant, he's the CEO. His social dynamics and him, Guru Prakash and my other colleagues, unfortunately not very well known in the industry at all because they don't speak the first language is not English. They speak English, yes, but they know. But I mean, when Mohan speaks Kannada, Swamiji's don't speak, because Mohan's Kannada is at a very, very, very high level, right? But there, like, for example, a minister was speaking and everybody was talking about the solar taxes, the policy has to change, we need to give it to the government, blah, blah, blah. He said, that's not how you do it, he said. Very simple. He had an Yakshagana in Udupi temple, in the Yakshagana artist. He's an Yakshagana artist, and then he called the minister. And while the minister was speaking, he went and actually put a cheat like, sir, please talk about taxes. So the guy, you see, the audience has watched this guy giving the receipt. And then he says that Mohan sir says that tax has to be removed from solar. Next day, the newspaper said, minister says tax has to be removed from solar. Led to the removal of taxes. Right. How do you teach these nuances? How do you teach this? I mean, you have this Excel, the McKinsey, the graphs. I said, boss, who reads your graphs? And I asked the McKinsey kids, so come, tell me who reads your graphs? And I show them 2-3 graphs and tell me from this graph, what implementation can I get? One, and I will read your graphs. No, sir, that is for policymaker. Okay, I'm a policymaker. What will I do with the graph? I know the world is burning here. What I don't know what my solutions are. I don't know how the blacksmith guy is going to survive in 5 years. I don't know what is the next profession the blacksmith kids is going to take. The drying of sugarcane in central. Tell me how these graphs actually lead to that implementation. Do you know why I ask this question? You know what happens is, when we do the surveys in the rural areas, we do it in Kannada, Tamil, Telugu, anything else, right? In social dynamics, right? Then it gets translated at the state. Panchayatanta in Kannada, Kannada, Kannada. Suddenly English, 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 Delhi, PricewaterhouseCoopers, Deloitte. Then that language comes in Deloitte, 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 Deloitte. It's only translated into Kannada. It's not emotionally translated. It's a complete different solution that goes. I said, boss, can you imagine, am I going to go to Narayan Murthy and Nandan and say, I'm going to define this, what do you call it, as a policy for software. What experience do you have? But why in the development sector, everybody is experienced? You'll never ask a sugarcane farmer, okay, what do you want? No sugarcane farmers are on the panel and say, this is how the policy should be. People say, no, they might not, they're not qualified. Qualified what? Then the guy who invented the first wheel was not qualified according to you. Right, according to you, he's uneducated, nothing he has, but he invented the bloody wheel that you use, right? So I want to know what is qualification mean, right? They don't know, or you don't know, or they don't understand, or you are not able to understand what they are saying, right? So this arrogance of education where, no, sir, they don't understand, or like just then the teacher blames, no, it comes from that education. A student is not able to understand, or you're not able to teach properly, boss. Don't give me a break. You're not able to teach. So have you ever thought, shall I change my methodology of explaining? Right, or the student might be right. He's not, or she is not understanding because he's also thinking, this lady is not able to understand.
True, very, very true. So where do you think the change should come?
I think change comes from us, our own. See that we somewhere have one arrow. We've brought in the arrogance of coming first, right? She's earning more in Infosys, and that cousin is earning less in Wipro. We are comparing ourselves in this well. Okay, what? Okay, you got. I mean, when she comes with 95 out of 100, the first question is, where did you lose your 5 marks? Your cousin got 96. Blah blah blah, etc. Why are we so competitive? Why don't you compete and say, boss, poverty is stinking, we're doing da-da-da-da, let's compete to remove poverty, right? Why are we not competing at the larger goals, but at very small competition at the small level is actually killing the larger goal person? That comes from our generation has not created mentors. Like even if somebody comes in, oh, from why have you gone abroad? Don't you want to serve the country? Blah, blah, blah. As soon as you come, this has so much of corruption and blah, 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 etc. You know how difficult it is. So what do you want? Somebody to work? Somebody you want don't work? What contradicting statements? So we all talk in convenience. So the change has to happen. And I believe the change will happen when we relook at class 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 classes. That's why the formative ages are.
Yeah.
practical education, inclusivity, sustainability, and leave them as free birds after six, and let them do break. Let them break things. If they break, they'll know what is inside. Why are we? Don't touch it. It'll break. Arey, let it break. Then he or she knows what is inside. We'll try to fix it. He'll be more. He or she will be more knowledgeable after that. So the question is: at second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, we need to relook at the curriculum, and that's where the change will happen. And there are.
Okay. So with the new education policy, things are slowly falling in place. There is hope. Maybe there is something that we can look forward to. But going back to your journey, Harish, when you set out with Selco years ago, to the journey that you've had all along, and the communication, conversations have changed. So what have you noticed in the change that has happened with conversations? Are people getting more responsible, or are people still taking the earth for granted?
No, I think what has happened, there are good intentioned people, everybody wants to solve. But unfortunately, what has happened is the so-called success of the California model of scale-up of the IT. It's been replicated as if that's the mantra for scale-up for everything. Oh, let's do access to water, scale it up. Like that. Put in money, throw technology, it will actually happen. And that's exactly what has happened in the Bay Area. But I'm saying that, okay, you want to reevaluate the Bay Area. Bay Area is the biggest not-for-profit. Let's be very clear. Lot of organizations collapsed. Where did that money go? Lot of good, brilliant engineers joined Google. So effectively, it was a grant to Google that they got trained on somebody else's. Number two, Google didn't pay for the creation and the modification of the internet. It's a grant to Google. The biggest subsidy Google got are these engineers, which led it to scale up. So now question is, when you're looking at water, energy, disability, everything else, the ecosystem has to be in place. And you need to subsidize the ecosystem for the common good. That's why you collect taxes, you collect everything else. That's why you have donor money. But today, unfortunately, what happens, those donor money are used for subsidizing the capital good. Oh, let me do 10 free solar lighting systems because I need it for my CSR brochure.
Yes.
So the end goal is the CSR brochure while you have killed the market for some young entrepreneur somewhere else. The incentives have to change. Like, what is the incentive of a technical professor in IIT or in Indian Institute of Science? The incentive is not my incentive is not to develop a great product. My incentive, can my paper be published in this journal? So if I ask a question to the professors and saying that, my question, my target, my this one is, how much of your paper has influenced change? That, if you can put it on the last page, this will potentially influence this, I'll be happy to read it. I'm not reading it because it's 26.24 or it's 0.004% better than the last paper and last school. Then I don't know what the benchmark is. Is it good? Is it bad? Or will it actually affect on the ground? So now still that narrative, the incentives are in the lock. Then now the narrative is scale. I don't know until the ecosystem and people are not able to understand, because we have become product centric. How many TVs have you sold? How many home lighting have you sold? How many clean water filters have you sold? How many megawatts of solar have you put up? Rather than how many people are actually using solar, you're not asking. Why are they using solar for? Did they know? Like, if I put a huge solar panel on top of your roof and then you put 20 air conditioners, are you sustainable? No. You're like, it's not about just talking about solar panels, right? How much do you... So now the whole debate has gone on the supply side. Is it needed, not needed? The efficiency of utilization, consumption, that has actually forgotten because scale. And then the second debate is return on investment. Okay, on how much percent return and what do you do? And that's scary because, as I said, okay, are you guys communist? I said, we're profitable from last 14 years. That's great. The street vendor who's profitable from 30 years, she makes more money than Uber. Uber is loss making. So Uber is minus, she's plus. So who's making more money? The street vendor, right? But why do we give kudos to the largest not-for-profit company in the world, that is Uber, which is never going to make money? And we say, so the benchmarks, for example, there are brilliant enterprises in the rural areas of our country, right? And of right from street vending to everything else. Look at our institutions, IIMs. What do they teach? Starbucks, Uber, case studies, expansion. I said, so when I go to IIM, I said, the easiest thing that you'll do is to write a case study on people who have spent a lot of money to do a structure. Starbucks ka case study, anybody will write. Anybody can actually join McKinsey. So all of you guys are going to do the easiest thing and the most comfortable, because your end goal is not to get, end goal is, can I get a 4-bedroom house with 2 cars? Right? That's your end goal, right? That's, so let's be, no, sir. Are pull. I mean, if that is the, not your end goal, I said, but travel once. I'm not telling, travel once in near the bathroom from Calcutta to Delhi on unreserved. Okay. Then tell me, all what you have learned, is it going to be any useful for all the passengers whom you would have spoken to, right? Because I said that in our country, as you get more educated, the less useful you become for society, right? This is the whole concept of specialization means you're less useful to other people, right? So I am saying, what are you useful for? I am saying, bolo, give me a good bad. I'll talk to your street vendor. Can you draw a business plan? On what emotion? You have a pricing strategy. You tell me on an Excel sheet, right? Great. At 8 o'clock in the evening, she's in Banchankri, and she has vegetables that the Brahmins of Banchankri will not buy. She has to be selling it to the Muslims of North Bangalore or Christians or whatever. And she has no refrigerator. What should be her pricing strategy? Because her vegetables are going to get spoiled. If she doesn't sell, her 3 kids are going to starve. You tell me what her strategy is. Right, but still she is profitable from the last 20 years because she has a strategy, while you cannot tell me that what her strategy is, because those are emotions, those are social dynamics, and she would have picked up, she's not a fool to have been in Banchankri for a certain reason with those vegetables, and the way she displays her vegetables is also what you talk about, window dressing, and you pay expensive consultants. Why does she sell those vegetables first, second, third, right? There's a pattern to what she does, but they don't speak English, no? So glorify kyun karne ka. And that is where I think we need to change of inclusivity thinking and push the boundaries of students. And then I the only thing I said that, okay, are you going to do the easiest thing after going out? Join PricewaterhouseCoopers, Deloitte, yeah. That's the easiest thing, tell me, boss. It's like if some boy is not working, my mother would say, a lazy guy doesn't apply for jobs he can actually do, useless, telling that he's not getting job, useless guy, right? But IIM guy's placement is poor. This time the market is really bad for the IIM students not to get a job. Yeah. Huh? Like, what if an IIM kid is not able to get a job? That's his problem. It's so we should remove these placement departments from IITs and IIMs, because you go on your own. Tell me which good university in the world has placement department, Oxford, Cambridge. None of them have. You fight for it. Why should I have it? See, our old culture of job karega, job karega, job karega. Solution nahi karega, job karega. And that has to be broken.
Okay. So in the current crisis that we are going through, especially now with the climate crisis, which is real, climate change is real, there are a lot of things that we can see shifting. Where do you think conversations need to be? And how do you think institutions, the younger generation who are now entering into the workspaces, entrepreneurship, all of this, can they meet? And if they can, what should the revolution
be? I think, see, what has happened is we scare people away. Yeah. And saying that the problem is so large, and then, oh, what can I do? Yeah. It's too large, it's beyond me. Or you say that, okay, I know it's scary. Is it going to make a difference? Right? I don't know where the difference is going to be. Or third is, oh, it's not in my backyard yet. Right? I mean, typically it's like, yeah, it's like very, the Delhi is shouting when the pollution happens in January, when the stubble happens, or suddenly the Chennai rains, everybody says climate change, and then after it's all forgotten during the dry monsoons. Okay. So I think what we need to do right from class 1 to say 12 or and what, how do you come up with programs and projects that are very, what you call it as, localized thinking first, right? And say, you, everybody's a change maker. Give me practical solutions. You come from this part of Kolar. The water is actually not doing. There are tomato crises. Forget climate change. I'm not putting the climate change. You don't know the climate change. The water is going down. That you know. Tomatoes are drying up. That you know. Tell me a good solution. But the water is going down in again 3-4 years more. Reason is it'll go down because last 5 years it has gone down. Might be it is for climate change, but I don't use the word climate change. Now tell me what is the solution to tell your parents, your uncle, a better methodology that in next 10 years, should they change the cropping pattern? Should they make it this? How should they adapt without using the word climate resilience, right? So, and then how is it not harmful? So can we come up with different practical programs that you get involved with? Because the only thing, climate change, okay, can I recycle plastic and plant more trees? Hey, Baba, it's much more than that. Like because the danger is if you don't teach, I'll tell you what, the people are saying that one of the biggest polluters are cement industries. Okay, because they pollute 36. Can we make high efficient cement industry? No. Can you replace cement? Not make it. So I'm going to make highly efficient cement industry now that pollutes only 10% water, but I build 20 more. So my effective output to the atmosphere is same or more than what it was there before. So have I got a substitute for cement? And that is when, why I'm particular on the 6th, 7th, 8th, and then the 11th, 12th of our country is that innovation, because we are good followers. And that's why if you see the, oh, many Indians are leading the IT in the US, Sundar Pichai and this and that and everybody else. Yes, but we never create anything. We don't create. We follow somebody who has already, we are very comfortable in the spaces that somebody has also, we just have to follow and become brilliant managers, right? We don't innovate and we don't push the buttons per se. So that is why I'm saying that change will happen when we start localizing programs, making understandable. How will you make it class 2 understandable? I don't want her to understand climate change. Why? I just want to understand if you don't do this, and for example, if I go to a class 10th kid in the Ganges and say, see, why I'm telling you the solution is not, because forget the climate change. The potential, there is a 50% chance that Ganges will become like Nile. And the way they done, I'm just story of Nile, I'm going to tell about these stories. And then they realize that this is very similar to the Ganges story, what they have been in the last 5 years. Their last 5 years is equivalent to what Nile was in the 50s. I'll go, see, unke paas tha, da, 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 this happened. So I, out of 100, one will trigger. I need to do something. Can I do better water management practices for my farmer? How do you then replicate it? How do you make it more better? And that is missing. We teach to, like you see, the greatness of a professor is how complex your presentation is. Man, he's very knowledgeable. That's the worst thing. He's imparted none of it to the audience. None.
Wow. So the baseline is simplicity. And you've really simplified the process, but also asked very important questions, Harish, because I think if each one of us gives a little thought to each of this, our entire way of thinking and way of living would be a lot different. Everyone went into a pause mode in the last 2 years, and the pandemic shook the whole world. Nobody knew what is happening. Now slowly things are coming back to a new normal is how they call it, but the perils are people may forget the lessons. What have your reflections been? Because you've already been in that space of such amazing questions that you were asking and being the change maker in the spaces you could influence. What has it been for you?
See, it's been a big learning. What you use the word, no? That everybody literally went into pause. And that was scary. Because like from work from home or, okay, it's a lockdown, right? People could have, brilliant people in Mumbai, Delhi, everywhere today could have, should have actually thought that I'm now actually very useless. That I am not needed. That is why I'm at home. If you were really needed, you should have been on the field in one way or the other. Why was nobody calling and said, yeah, 1.3 billion people in crisis, 5 billion people, but you had the luxury of being staying at home because you were not needed, right? Your brain was not needed, you were not needed. And so that's why when people, I said, why nobody's calling you? Hey, friends call kara, daru pira, ye kara, wo kara. I said, the question is, then what have you are head of there? A lot of my colleagues are head of this company. That I said, then I put a challenge to some of them saying that a lot of the younger rural enterprises are collapsing. Can you give them advice? But you know, that was my most disaster decision because many of them did not know how to take a decision of a business that does not have a formal ecosystem, right? Then it's like everybody knew, I'll pose a question, they knew to turn to the last page where the answer is written and then I'll work backward to give you the answer. That typical education system of ours, right? 100 out of 100 people that I asked for mentorship absolutely failed, completely collapsed. So for me, that scared me, that I didn't realize that, okay, their knowledge is actually of very little used for the development of this country and the mentorship. So, and a lot of people stayed back home, and especially some of the youngsters, you know. So what we did was we canceled the holidays of a lot of the youngsters. We actually took up a hotel and said, we will be in our own bubble. We will work with the Health and Energy Nexus. At least 20, 30 of the youngsters out of the 100 that we have grew by more than 5 to 8 years in those two lockdowns. Grew and completely. We were asked to build a hospital in 100 days. We were given a piece of land. There were 4 youngsters. How do you get labor when it's a complete lockdown? How do you make balance? How do you actually look at the design? How do you make it sustainable? I need the most sustainable material during the lockdown. What are the passes? They grew more than 5 to 7 years. The confidence level of those youngsters for COVID for me was a brilliant way for a lot of these youngsters to come of age in many ways. Like at the hardest point when, okay, boss, you had to get passes from the best time to fly. I mean, I flew Bangalore airport when I was one of the 3 people inside the whole airport, right? It's a different, but then the CSF, everybody become, why are you traveling? What are you traveling? Haan sir, aapko travel to karna chahiye. Aap padhe loge, log nahi travel karenge, to fir desh ki kya hogi hamari? It's like, gareeb fas rahe hain, but aapke videos mein aa rahe hain ki hum kaisa cooking bana rahe hain, hum kya kar rahe hain, hum ye kar rahe hain, walk lockdown mein kar rahe hain, movies bana rahe hain, TikTok kar rahe hain, sare kya ho raha hai? Like, right? So you feel, where are we out of reality? Which showed me that a lot of the English speaking crowd was actually out of reality. And oh, Harish, kuch chahiye kya paisa? Did I ask you? CSR, I can get it. Did I ask you? But do you have the guts? Come with me to Meghalaya. No, my parents and my wife are saying this and that. That's it. Right? A lot of us don't have that luxury. A lot of us don't have the luxury to think. And don't talk about that. That was a big, big learning lesson for me in COVID, was how many of the educated class is actually useless when it comes to a crisis.
That's a lot that you said in one sentence. And as we move towards the end of the conversation, 3 life lessons, Harish, because I think with you, it'll be a whole day and we'll still have a lot more left with the experiences life has given me.
I think the life lessons, one is absolutely, we're too fascinated with, we confused education and learning. And we completely confuse them and make it tangible, and unfortunately make it tangible in terms of marks, in terms of first, in terms of grades, and then your resumes, and then further complication in, can I see somebody's LinkedIn profile, et cetera, et cetera. No, if you want to do true work, and I challenge all of the youngsters, I will help you burn your degrees and you will be successful. You will be successful. That's a challenge. If you really want to work and you want to call me, and what are the barriers? Parents, teachers, that's all. There's enough of work where you will want to succeed, you want to go, there is enough. So life lesson one is that. Second is that how we confuse between financial poverty and intellectual poverty. because these are two diametrically not the same. And we believe that people who are financially poor are also intellectually poor. And that is where the inclusivity thinking and third party comes in, right? And the third, I guess, is see, with the biases that you come up with when you're growing up, like I had the biggest support in many ways from the government, in not in terms of financial resources. We blanket the government and say it's corruption and blah, blah. There are numerous champions in the government across the world. Okay, pick those up. Even 200, 199 might be, pick that one person up, you can actually start moving the needle per se. And never, never, I mean, I would say biggest life lesson is never take resumes. And never talk to them and also instill that. There are a lot of people will drop out. No, it's and talk to them as if you're getting in a partnership with that colleague of yours. Not like you're, the very fact that we are hiring, it's a colonistic slavery, right? I am hiring, I hired him. Who? Can we actually talk together and say, boss, this is where it is. This is where the train is going. Are you going towards that direction? Do you want to go towards that direction? Or then you don't realize that you're not going in that direction. But that's where I think and say that, because you're going to be, we say in Selco that Saturday is a working day. The day the poor get Sunday holiday, you will get Saturday holiday. Let's be very clear. And for us, you need to have work-life balance, agreed. But for us, Selco is life. So it depends on what your work is, right? So that filters a lot of people up in many ways, but that's why I stopped taking resumes and everything else.
Wow. You know, all through whatever you said only resonated with one quote that Wayne Dyer had said some time back, which is, if you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. And all through, I think that was something that you constantly were speaking about. Mr. Harish Handy, thank you so much for the time and for this beautiful conversation. There's a lot that we need to ruminate on and think about. And I think right from the parenting thought processes, if things start changing, conversations change at home, it'll start reflecting and causing the ripple effect in school and society outside. So I think the change needs to come from home. And if each one of us takes it on ourselves, I think we'll be living in a more beautiful and more thinking India rather than a following India. So thank you so very much for this conversation. Appreciate your time. And once again, thank you for being on You and I with Rashmi Shetty. Thanks
thank
a lot.
You. Thank you.
With that, we come to the end of this weekly quest of You and I with Rashmi Shetty. Do let us know if you know people who make the world beautiful. Write in to rashmi.thethirdeye@gmail.com. That is rashmi.thethirdeye@gmail.com. Come, let's explore this amazing world together, both you and I.